Donald Jeffries Show.
Hi, and welcome to the Donald Jeffries Show. This is Donald Jeffries with a very special guest today that I talked to her a couple of years ago, but it's just I'm thrilled and honored to have Lana Wood, who is a accomplished actress in her own right, but was the sister of the late, great Natalie Wood, and she has quite the resume herself. She was a James Bond girl, did lots of TV shows and movies, and now she's written a controversial, explosive new book that is climbing at the bestseller charts, Little Sister, My Investigation into the Mysterious Death of Natalie Wood. So we're going to talk quite a bit about that. Lana, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Glad to be there.
Well, it's wonderful to have you. So let's, you know, we talked a couple of years ago, but I guess before air, you kind of explained, I guess, kind of a non-disclosure agreement that I had no idea. I knew you were very interested in this, but so you, how long were you working on this book?
About a year.
Okay, well, that's good. So you, when we talked last, obviously you had your suspicions. You talked a lot about it. So did you, within the last year, you know, since I've talked to you or anything, did you discover any new information? I know you want people to buy the book, but is there any kind of teaser you can throw out there that might be something new and explosive? That
Well, there is a great deal of new information, but it isn't information that I found in a year. I have been working with the homicide detectives from the sheriff's department and the new coroner and an eyewitness and an ear witness and two other witnesses who cannot be named and are really unhappy about getting caught as witnesses. They didn't want to talk then. They don't want to talk now, but they did end up speaking with the detectives. So it's all these things that if you put them together carefully, step by step, there's absolutely, you know, no question as to what happened to her. And you can add in the fact that I know my sister very, very well. And there are certain things she simply would not do.
So well, I remember
you put that together. You've got it all laid out.
Well, I remember you talking about how Natalie was the, you know, the epitome of a movie star, and she didn't go out to collect the mail without her makeup and everything on. So you
right.
mentioned something. She would have never gone out on the boat like that. Touch on that a little bit.
In a nightgown, she would not have gone anywhere.
Exactly.
Not anywhere. A nightgown and wool socks? No.
Yeah.
No. Also, she had 26 fresh bruising and injuries on her that, and I'm quoting the sheriff's detectives now, that are not typical of bumping against anything. They are typical of spousal abuse. This is what they see time and time again, are these kind of injuries. So that in itself speaks volumes.
Well, are you, I mean, I'm sure, and you get, and I just want to congratulate you again on getting a major publisher. You know, I just had my book about showbiz published on Borrowed Fame, Money, Mysteries, and Corruption in the Entertainment World, and I go over all, including Natalie's death, a lot of stuff in it, but talking to a lot of people out there, I know that a lot of them can't find any publisher. So you did really well. You got Harper. Yeah, you beat the odds there. So congratulations to you. And I know that's great. And because you deserve it. I know you would have gone through some rough times, and I'm just so happy for you. But
I just really want to bring the truth to the surface for Natalie. I want this done for her. I've got her back. I'm going to watch out for her, and I'm going to make sure that she is not misrepresented in any way, and that the truth comes out.
Well, good for you, because I know you're fighting basically a one-person battle here, because I know that obviously nobody else in the family supports. Now, since the book has been published, again, this is when I talked to you, I had no idea you were writing a book before. Has anyone in the family, how have they commented on it? Have they responded at all to the book?
No. Not at all.
So they're hoping it goes away.
You know, nobody ever spoke with the detectives. So, you know, why would they speak out about a book?
Right,
they would
right.
just say simply the same things that they've said for years and years. So, you know, I don't really expect anything at all.
Now I know how you feel, and obviously there are only three people on the boat. I think it's pretty clear who you're pointing fingers at. And it's kind of a logical suspect, but I HarperCollins is a big publisher, so I'm sure they have a legal staff. So do they vet everything?
Yep.
And they're okay. So you're not worried about being sued? Great, great.
Because every single word, four attorneys.
Well, that's great. And how mm-hmm. now? So when how did this all come about? Now, when you did someone approach you about writing a book, or did you send feelers out? How did you get an agent? How did this process start?
Somebody approached me.
Somebody approached you because they knew.
An agent who's an agent of a friend of mine, because I was talking to my friend and just saying various things, and she said, "You've got to get that out there," and I said, but she kind of moved ahead of me. It was Catherine Falk, Peter Falk's daughter. And Catherine contacted a friend of hers who's an agent, and it all just sort of, you know, went by locomotive from there on. It was, you know, all done rather rapidly. So I was very pleased that there was that much interest, because I said, you know, I don't want to do a flowery book. I don't want to reminisce. I've done that. I want everybody to understand who Natalie is and how she died. So that was basically it. So it was actually Catherine Falk.
Well, that's great. Well, yeah, and I think Catherine Falk was – I think I mentioned her in my book. She was – wasn't she also involved with like some kind of I could be getting mixed. Peter Falk's younger wife or something, and they were trying to intervene as far as adult children's rights. Or am I getting her mixed up with somebody else?
And I have no idea about that.
Okay, I mean,
probably a while ago. I don't even recall it.
Okay, so L, now how has how has any of the law enforcement apparatus out there responded to your book, the LAPD or anyone else? Is there hope? Because the LAPD basically kind of, they didn't really reopen it, but didn't they just kind of say they're...
Yes, they did.
They officially reopened?
The case is open right now.
Okay, so it's officially reopened.
Oh, absolutely. And Robert Wagner has also been named a person of interest.
Yes, wow, interesting. So what are they planning to do with this now if it's reopened?
They're planning on getting as much as they can. They need the smoking gun. And that's what they're trying to find. You know, the head of the homicide department held a press conference, and it was about the reopening and the naming of person of interest, and he was, you know, besieged by reporters, as I'm sure you would understand, and he ended the conference by saying all anyone knows is there were two people on the back of a boat, and then there was one. So that's how he ended his conference. Very,
wow.
Very strong. Yes, very strong.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, so it's and this comes out of two. This is, Natalie died in 81, right? Was it 81 or 80?
Yeah,
81. Okay.
81.
So just in time for the 40th anniversary. That was interesting.
Yes,
it was published 4 years.
Yep. That's also why I hurried along. I need to get as many people as possible to read this and put together the facts as I did.
How have any of you, I mean, I don't know how many showbiz friends you still have, or how many people in the business you see. You're talking about Peter Falk. You have contacts there. How, what has the response been there from any of them? Anybody in the industry? Has anybody?
Incredible. Yes. Tons of people from the industry. A lot of people from behind the camera, producers. I had response from the head of a studio who isn't any longer, but was. They're absolutely ecstatic about the book. I've never heard so much praise. Ever. I mean, I'm just, I'm stunned by the reaction. I mean, I've had people who call me and say, you know, I've called this person, and this person, and told them all to get the book immediately, that it's a must read. I mean, I've just had fantastic reception. I'm so glad.
Oh, that's wonderful. It's good. I think people, I mean, I know, I was, you know, I had, as a real young guy, I mean, I just was crushed when she died. I mean, I, you know, like millions of other people, I had a crush on Natalie from afar. I mean, she was gorgeous and wonderful actress. And, you know, I sensed something wasn't right. The scene was inadequately explained right away. I think that's probably been a sense out there, especially within the industry. Yeah. I would imagine, you know, that they pretty much, there are questions always there, because I, especially anybody, I guess, or you obviously knew her better than anybody else, but some, and you had these public interviews that we've seen where she expressed the fear about the water. And so the idea that she would go out at night, regardless of how she was dressed.
No, 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 no.
Yeah, that would be a,
she would not do that.
Yeah. So what do you, I mean, I don't want you to give the book away, but I, obviously is there a talking point way for that, without giving the book away, for you to describe, you, I mean, I pretty much know what, I guess, what happened. But what do you think with the motive, or do you want, I don't know what you can go into, because I know you want to save it for the book, but what can you talk about in that area?
I don't like to guess at things or
theorize.
I like to just deal with facts and make decisions based upon facts. And not my heart. So I, you know, the motive is very clear to me, but I don't write about it, so everybody can sort of think what they want.
Right, and there's obviously there were speculations, because the third person on board the board was Christopher Walken, and you know, all heard that maybe Robert Wagner was jealous of Walken, and there was a fight over that. Is that you think maybe what triggered it?
I'm sure it didn't help. She spent the night before that. I really wish you read the book before this, but that's okay. The night before that, she'd spent the night off the boat. She didn't want to even be on the boat.
Right.
She stayed in a hotel in Catalina, and you know, she wasn't going to get back on, but she could not find the proper way to get back to the mainland. There were no sky planes available or sea planes. There was, you know, there was nothing at the moment. So, yeah, it was an unhappy trip right from the beginning.
Right. I understand that she was there before and everything as well. But tell us about, you know, and I want to go over a little bit your history and the family history there. I mean, obviously, Natalie was a big star from the time she was a kid. Tell the audience how she got started in show business, how you got started in show business, and what was it like growing up?
Natalie was living in, Natalie and my parents were living in a small town up in Northern California, and a film company came to shoot on the streets, literally. So everybody around gathered to watch a film being made. And at one point, the director said, you know, that little girl over there, can you, you know, you and your mother come here, please? And Natalie went over there, and he said, can you drop an ice cream cone and cry? And Natalie said, yes, I can. So she was in Happy Land with Don Ameche, and she was the little girl who, you know, was walking down the street, dropped an ice cream cone, and began to cry. But the director remembered her, and 2 years later, sent for her to test for a film with Orson Welles. And that's how it all began. Natalie got that role, and that's all she wrote.
And certainly at this time of the year, I mean, we've all seen Miracle on 34th Street. That's probably, you know, obviously as a child actor, that's what she's best remembered. Do you have any memory? Were you around yet?
I haven't been able to have a memory of any of those things since she was 8 years older than me.
Okay, yeah.
Therefore, when she did a lot of those films, I wasn't even around.
Right. So you. So there's. Yeah. That's an 8 year difference there. So, but you all were close later, despite the 8 years, right?
Yes, we were. Excuse me. Yes, we were very close.
So it was, now,
great loss.
Well, absolutely. Yeah. So, but you probably remember from the Rebel Without a Cause era. You were old enough then, I guess, to remember something. And Natalie, by that's when she, I guess, became a real sensation with that movie, and then her Hollywood career really took off.
Yeah, the first thing I remember being on the set for was Rebel Without a Cause.
Yeah.
I remembered that. But, you know, and then, of course, things later that she made later on. But that was my first time on a set with Natalie. I was about 8 years old, so seven, eight. But it was nerve wracking.
Yeah. Well, and so how did you get your own acting career started? Just kind of see you sitting there at Natalie's little sister.
My mom one day said, you know, go put on something nicer and you're going to meet some people, be very polite. And I was like, okay. And did so. And I was taken to the offices of John Ford and John Wayne. And they chatted with my mom briefly, and I sat there quietly. And John Wayne came up to me, and Ford said, you know, can you pick her up? And he lifted me up and said, yep. That's no problem. And they said, great, okay, you're little Debbie. And that was it. So I went to shoot in Monument Valley and with Natalie and my mom, and did a lot of work as a child up until about the age of 14. I think the last thing I did was Five Finger Exercise with Maximilian Schell and Rosalind Russell. And then I sort of ditched Hollywood for a while, lived with Natalie and RJ, and just wanted to get my feet on the ground and not be involved with having to work. I wanted a true school experience. And so my mom finally gave in and said, okay, fine. She won't send me on any more interviews or do anything. And so that was really delightful for me. And then when I got out of school, I went to work at a boutique in Beverly Hills called Jax, J-A-X. It was a very hot celebrity spot, beautiful clothing, very very traditional, you know, tasteful, simple cuts, but very, very nice. And one day Neil McQueen came in and, you know, was sort of like, Lana, what are you doing here? And I told her, I said, I'm working here. And she said that she knows that Leo Penn, who is a friend of hers, is looking for an actress who is over 18, but looks, you know, 14 years old. And she said, you could do that. And I said, I don't know. And she just kept at it. And she talked me into going. She said, I'm going to make the appointment. And I'm calling you later. And I'm going to tell you what time your appointment is. And you're going to go. So Neil kind of rushed me along. And I went in and got the role. And I just remember the first day working, walking off the set. And for the first time saying, I really do want to do this. I like this. It felt it felt very much like home to me. And so I began working again.
That's great. Well, now do you have any sense even now, because you mentioned The Searchers, which is most film critics consider that one of the greatest films ever made. How does it feel to be to have played some part in it?
Very proud. I'm very proud and very grateful to be a part of that film. I think it's an amazing film, and I know it was remastered not too long ago in a large get together was put at the Academy, the Motion Picture Academy, and Peter Bogdanovich was there. I was there. Pippa Scott, who is still with us, obviously, she was there, and various people. It was really nice. Peter Ford. So we ran the film again and had a little audience asking questions, went up on the stage, and the film remastered is just absolutely stunning, and I'm so grateful to be a part of it. I really am.
Yeah, that's and of course, and you later ended up being a James Bond, which is what I remember you from. Teenager with Hormones. Yeah. A lot of people remember that, and very sexy. And I said, "Wow, Natalie Wood's got a sister." And did Natalie was she? I mean, how did she? Did she encourage you to? Or did she tell you, "No, you don't want to be in this business," or anything like that? Did she encourage her?
She didn't encourage me nor do anything, actually. If I wanted to run lines with her, she was open for that. But she said that what she did not want is for anybody to ever say that I got two movies or that I got anything due to her influence. So she never helped one bit. She said, "You're out there, you're doing it on your own." And so I did.
Well, and you know, I found something online when I was researching my book that I found was that your late daughter wrote online. I don't know if you ever saw that, but she was writing about being related to Natalie. And basically, it was like some kind of a forum or something. But she basically talked about how she never got anything out of being, you know, related to Natalie Wood. So I think, and that's the impression
I get. What?
That
she
never
got writing something.
It was on a forum. You know, I was just reached. I just came upon it. It was some kind of
a forum.
And it was on a forum, an internet forum. And I guess somehow people, I don't know why they were talking about it. I'll have to send you what I wrote about it, but I quoted it verbatim from the author forum. And I guess someone was accusing or inferring that, you know, you're related to Natalie Wood, you've had it made or something like that. You know, you're a big movie star.
I don't think that's an accusation. I think that's a fact and it's wonderful.
yeah, it is. But I think she was trying to say she got nothing out of this story. Yeah, like she didn't get a bunch of money or anything like that. So, but
no.
Exactly. And now I want to. What people have asked, and they asked me before the first time you were on the show, they asked me about the Kirk Douglas thing, I haven't read your book, but I do know that you did come out, because I thought when you were on the show before you were pretty much saying that it was in. So that is in your book. And you want to talk a little bit about that? People want
to
know.
I don't have much to say about it other than I had been approached by a lot of press when that story started circulating. I refused to say anything then, and I was approached again when he passed away, and I refused to say anything because I just thought it was not the right time and not the right thing to do. But now, you know, in an age of the Me Too movement And the fact that nobody's really hiding these things, and I think Natalie would have wanted to say something now, that's what happened. And therefore, that's, you know, that came from her own mouth. And I was in the car when she went on the interview, and in the car when she came back, and my mom and I went home with her. And she was, you know, she was extremely upset. And as my mom was wont to do, she told her not to say anything because it would be her word against someone else's who was famous and well-liked, and she would just end up ruining her career. So she didn't say anything. And it's very unfortunate that that's the way things were. But that was my mom's advice on everything at all times. Mm-hmm. I mean, Natalie broke her wrist when she was a young kid doing driftwood. The guy timing when this little bridge was to collapse, she was supposed to step off of the bridge and then it collapses. And he got the timing wrong and he collapsed it with her on it. And she did fall. They did print that take. She had been able to grab onto a part of the bridge and, you know, work her way up, but she broke her wrist, and my mom never took her to a doctor. They never said anything. My mom said, again, don't say anything. Don't complain. You're not, you know, you're not done for the day, so you keep working and keep your mouth shut. So
What do you think? She had that attitude because she liked the Hollywood lifestyle and she didn't want to see Natalie lose it?
She was building a life for Natalie, a career, and she thought that she was doing something very good for her, which in a way she did, but you know, life throws you curveballs.
Right. So your mom was, she had some stage mother energy.
A stage mother?
Yeah, was she a stage mother?
Well, I suppose I don't really know what that means, but did she push Natalie to work? Absolutely. Did she look for opportunities for Natalie to work? Absolutely. Yeah. Did she always make sure that, you know, she was the one guiding and deciding and finding the best agent and the best roles and, you know, keeping Natalie properly motivated? Absolutely. So if that makes her a stage mother, then I suppose she was, but she wasn't doing it for any other reason other than to get Natalie in there with a good, stable career and give her a good life.
Sure. Well, you had mentioned on the when we talked before that, when you first started questioning the official narrative of what happened to Natalie that night, was an accident, that no one in the family supported you, and your mom wasn't happy with you questioning it either, because, I mean, maybe she was a bit starstruck then still for Robert Wagner. Was that, did I get that wrong?
Well, my mom was living in a condominium that Natalie had put in her will that she would have, she would be able to live there for the rest of her life, her and my dad. But RJ at one point decided that it would be good for his daughter, Katie. And so he found another place for my mom to live. My mom at that point, and he would not listen to me, had dementia. So whatever fantasies she went in, you know, in her mind, and whatever she clung on to was, you know, due to the fact that she really was not in her right mind. It was really sad. I brought her to live with me after she burnt down her new apartment, and she stayed with me until she passed away. So it was very, very rough. Very rough.
Yeah, and I know you've had lots of things. That's why I'm so happy that this is going on for you. Now, so how does it feel to be kind of have you had any television offers? Have you been contacted by Entertainment Tonight or anybody like that for the book?
Collins is arranging all those things, turning down what they don't feel is important. And, you know, I've done so many interviews at this point that I'm interview happy. I mean, I've done interviews for a lot of British press, a lot of Australian, Canada, where else? I get mail from a lot of, from Germany, Spain, and the Netherlands for some reason, suddenly. So I've done quite a lot. I think I'm just about done.
I appreciate you coming on here. I mean, this has got to be something new to you, right? I mean, you haven't, because I know you've kind of, I mean, I don't know when the last time was you acted, but this has got to be, I mean, you summoned up the energy, though, guys. I imagine it's because you're obviously passionate and want to tell the story.
Yeah. No, I am very dedicated to this. But, I'm exhausted at this point, because every time I go and discuss it on a show, I am reliving everything that happened, and it's very painful. I mean, even when I was just writing the book, there were so many times when I would just stop everything and walk away. It was too upsetting. I would, you know, go out and get coffee or do anything, stand out in the backyard. You know, it was a lot of tears and very, very difficult. And I found that reliving it over and over again with the interviews was really tough on me.
Mm-hmm. Well, what was the process like of writing it yourself? Had you written before? Did you have any experience writing?
Goodness gracious. I had a book on the New York Times bestseller list for 8 weeks.
Oh.
So, yes, I've written a great deal before. I wrote some prose that was published in Playboy magazine, which is the only way they got pictures of me. and it was Hugh Hefner's decision, because I called him and said, I don't want to do it. You know, just pull the photos. And he was a very sweet guy. And he was also very clever, because he managed to work around my objections by giving me something that I did like. And he said, how, mm-hmm. you know, what could he do to make me feel more comfortable in this? And we got around to the writing, and I sent my stuff over to him, and he said, absolutely, he will publish it, because that's how much he feels strongly about my photos, the photo layout and all that. So he very cleverly worked that. I've been writing all my life. I started as a child. I didn't have anything published, because I never really showed anybody but my mom and dad. I also used to work as an associate producer over at Warner Brothers. I was doing the Mickey Splane Mike Hammer with Stacey Keach. Mm-hmm. And rewriting it, and Bruce Boxleitner's show. When they had a problem, Standards and Practices, the script was thrown my way, saying, you know, fix this and fix that. And so I was rewriting that almost on a daily basis.
Well, I'm sorry. I feel ignorant that I didn't have any idea that you were such an experienced writer. Did you ever try to pitch anything to Natalie? Did you ever try to write anything for her?
No. We kept our work separate.
Okay, I'm just wondering if you thought, oh, this you ever had like a, you know, desire to say, well, I want to write the perfect role for Natalie or something like that.
No. And she would call me and say, come over. She's going through some books of hers, because she wanted to produce films for her to be in. And we would sit on the floor in front of her books and, you know, talk about various ones. Or she'd call me and say, I know you worked with this director. What was he like? So she actually was very sweet. She was called me for advice.
Well, it's what was Natalie's favorite movie at first?
This Property's Condemned.
Huh. And she had he has Gypsy, Splinter in the Grass, Sex and the Single Girl. That was one of my. But what was your favorite?
Probably Splendor in the Grass. I like so many for different reasons, but probably Splendor in the Grass. I really like that film. I like how she handled it and what came out of that. I was very, very happy for her that it turned out like that. I mean, incredible, incredible movie.
And wasn't she involved romantically with Warren Beatty for a time?
Long after, when she left her then husband RJ, later on she did become involved with him, yes, but not during filming. They weren't even friends when she was working with him. She really had to fake the fact that she was madly in love with him. He, for some reason, Warren was told that Natalie didn't like him. And it made him very uncomfortable on the set, and he actually avoided her at all times. So it was, they were not involved while she was married. Natalie didn't do that.
What is somebody like Warren Beatty was involved in some way with Natalie, so obviously knew her well. I'm wondering if you ever heard from people like that.
Yes, I have. I've spoken with Warren many times.
Does he have the same kind of doubts you do?
Yeah, of course.
Okay, so it's pretty, but I would imagine it's pretty widespread out there, and yet you can't.
Yeah.
But isn't that? I mean, I kind of. Yeah, and it's when you look at this. The book so far has it exceeded your expectations? Because again, it looks like it's doing really well.
I only hope. I really don't read comments or reviews.
Yeah,
or anything.
It'll drive you crazy.
I did what I wanted to do, and some people will like it, and some people will hate it, as they do with all books, and certainly true crime. So. I'm not really concerned. I just want people. I did get a fast little shout out on Twitter one time where some man that I did not know said that he was very much in the other group as far as people who say he did it and people who said he didn't. And he said, after reading your book, I have no doubt in my mind how she died. So he said, you turned me completely around. So, things like that are lovely.
Sure.
I get angry when people tell stories about her that are not accurate and that are cruel.
Mm-hmm.
So I just try to dispel those myths.
You have, we've had some questions in the chat room for you. A couple people have asked, did you or Natalie spend any time with the Laurel Canyon crowd?
No. Like
the music crowd out there now?
No.
And for somebody here wants to know, did you know Warren Zevon?
No, I don't know who that is.
Okay, yeah, he was a recording artist, okay. And he must have thought.
No, we really, neither Natalie or I were actually in any kind of a music scene.
She didn't hang around with any.
Most of the people, no. Most of the people that we spent time with were writers, directors, actors, and it's all people that she knew and was friends with.
Oh, people and people friends, are.
I'm sorry?
Are people. No, people are they're taught they're listing your credits here: Night Gallery, Bonanza, Mission Impossible, Starsky and Hutch, The Fall Guy. What do you what are some of your memories of working on all those television Night Gallery? What were your impressions of Rod Serling? He's one of my favorites.
I loved my Night Gallery. It was fun working with Cloris Leachman. She was sort of all over the place. She's very good, but she was sort of all over the place, and it was made it very interesting filming. The director finally said at one point, you know, Cloris, can you just tell me where you're going to stop? Because we can't just follow you all over with the camera. We've got to put the camera in one spot. So, but it was wonderful. I loved the Night Gallery. It was great fun.
Did you get to meet Rod Serling himself?
No, I did not. No.
Oh, really? Okay. I was wondering because that's
no, he didn't come on the set or anything.
I didn't realize. Okay. So, and we have Bonanza. What was the Bonanza crowd like?
They were all very nice. I actually was able to send my horse that I was having trouble with. The wrangler on the set said that he would train him. I just had to trailer him over to his place, and for a very low price, which was great for me. And he finally said to me about a month later, he said, you know, come get your horse. He said, you know, not only is he headstrong and a little mean, he said, but he's stupid too. And I said, wow, okay. So he basically deemed him untrainable. And I got my horse, went and got my horse back.
Now, have you had any indication from anybody, is HarperCollins or anybody, that maybe there's potential for a film, a documentary, or something based on your book?
Lots of people, yeah. Lots of companies are discussing things with Harper's, and you know, we have a lot of decisions to make.
Wow. Well, that would be wonderful to see that, because this is really, I mean, we've had a few documentaries. I know, was it a couple years ago, was it HBO that had the documentary, and you really didn't get to appear in it, I guess, because Robert Wagner and Natalie's kids seem to have controlled that, or was that, am I mistaken?
Oh,
that was
a couple years? They begged me to do that, to do the HBO special. Yeah, I turned them down. I turned down the director, Monsieur Bouzereau. I have all the letters that they sent, not the kids, but the production company, HBO, the director. I kept all those, and I kept my responses, because I finally said, you know, I can't possibly, I understand they're trying to make this loving show about Natalie's achievements, and, you know, I wish them all the best of luck, but I really can't go and spend time with people that don't even want to see me. That would make me far too uncomfortable, and I don't think it's right. And the next thing I knew is they were evidently going through gossip and, you know, false stories. I never saw it because I don't wish to. But friends of mine would call and say, oh, boy, you know, why are they doing that? I said, you know, I don't know. I said, first of all, don't blame the girls, because they lost their mom when they were very young. So all they know of any personality of Natalie's or anything she did is from their dad, you know?
Yeah.
So whatever they think is what he has said. And I find it very, very sad that he's doing that, as he should have just allowed them to think what they want. And but he didn't do that. And, yeah, I understand that was very hateful. But, no, I didn't do it, but it was my decision not to do it.
Okay. So, it sounds like you were more considerate of their feelings maybe than they were of yours.
That's okay.
That's a good thing.
That doesn't bother me at all.
It's a commendable call.
I've got to sleep at night, and I've got to know that I haven't hurt anyone. You know, how they react and what they do is just, you know, is up to them.
And you have a couple people in the chat room that saw you. You were interviewed by Dr. Phil recently. So what was that like? That's a big show.
Oh, that was actually not too recently. It was before the pandemic.
I thought it was recently.
No, it was, well, obviously it was at least 2.5, years ago. But, all those companies, all those guys are always, you know, very kind and very professional. And, super, I usually have a very good time.
So how was, and again, I didn't see the interview, but did Dr. Phil, was he skeptical about what you were saying, or did he seem to?
No, of course not. No, not in the least. And Dr. Oz, I just recently did Dr. Oz.
Okay, how was
that?
And
he even put together a boat and figures showing, you know, what logically could have happened. And he's 100% believes what I do.
Wonderful. So you haven't met, has anyone in the media been skeptical of what you're saying at all? Have you met resistance from anybody?
No.
Well, that's, I think, it, you know, it's indicative of how, you know, Natalie, we still look at her. Of course, she's frozen in time.
I don't,
you know,
make assumptions. I didn't print assumptions or any kind of guesswork or maybe ifs. I simply wrote the fact. According to, as I said, the detectives that are on the open case, the new coroner who is on the open case, and the eyewitness and a couple of ear witnesses as well. That's what I'm basing it on. It's not any assumptions of mine, because, you know, that and $5 will get you a Starbucks. So I don't bother with my assumptions. It doesn't really matter.
Do you still keep in contact with the boat captain from that night? Another question.
Yes, I do.
And how is he?
I'm sorry.
And he was one of the first ones, I guess, years ago that really kind of, when he opened up finally, kind of belatedly about it. Wasn't that?
It was very, very difficult for him. He called me in tears out of the blue. I mean, and he was just desperate. He didn't know what to do. He said he's lied all these years and, you know, why he did and, you know, how persuasive RJ is. Well, RJ was his boss. This was when they hired him, a young guy who ran fishing boats.
Right.
So, you know, to be hired by Robert Wagner and Natalie Wood was quite something. That was his only livelihood as well. But he desperately wanted to unburden himself about the truth, but he was scared to go to anybody in, in law enforcement, as he was also scared that he would be culpable for her death as well, you know.
So, well, how
he wouldn't do it.
Do you have you had any contact with Christopher Walken?
No, but Christopher Walken did go into the sheriff's department. He spoke at length with the two detectives that I've been dealing with. And what he said to them has been sealed and will not ever be disclosed. That was his condition. But, it added some more fire to the wood. I should think of it different.
So you've never, but, never had any contact with him at all?
No.
Do you know if I don't know if he was friends with, it doesn't sound like he was really friends with Robert Wagner, that they had contact,
no.
You know?
No, he was friends with Natalie, not with RJ.
Right. So that's, you know, it's, and I'm trying, there's a reference. People are talking in the chat room. Is there, there's a, of someone writing a book now, another book about the cover up of Natalie's murder investigation. Do you know anything about that? Of course, they don't have the author. Okay.
Yeah,
well,
yeah. No.
Well, I would imagine maybe people will after yours, because you're now, you were, so you're on Dr. Oz. What other, were you on any other television programs on this, the tour you're doing for your book?
I don't know. I honestly did so many. I have no idea. I'm supposed to do Tamron Hall. And,
oh yes.
Yeah. I don't remember who else at this point in time. I did. Dateline. I did that.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
And that was my second time for Dateline.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I saw the earlier ones. But so this is, so the media is
no,
not.
This, I just did this one with over at a friend's house. I met with them and we went on camera, face to face, masks when we weren't talking.
So do you hold out any hope? Is there any? Is there something inside of you that says maybe one of Natalie's kids will eventually contact you?
Know.
You know?
No, I don't think they ever will. I would be very surprised if they did. And any hope, what, that Natalie's case will be solved?
No, that they would contact you and say, you know,
oh, no.
There's something. Well, I mean, I know that's a weird, because that's their dad, and obviously it's not, you know. It's
that's the only parent they have.
Right,
you know? Natasha's biological father died recently, Richard Gregson, and you know, the only person she has is RJ, and now I won't say anything.
The name of the guy that is writing that book is Samuel A. Peroni. He's a retired federal prosecutor and Arkansas trial lawyer. So you haven't heard anything about that book?
I guess he's putting together whatever it is he's read too. So I have no idea.
Yeah, I don't know what he's going to go beyond yours, but Natalie is frozen forever in time for us. It's still beautiful, 40 years old. So what do you think if she hadn't have died? What do you think? Can you speculate at all what she might have done and what she might be like today?
Yeah, she would be producing, perhaps directing. And certainly looking for roles that she could expand upon to work in. She would be looking for roles for herself, but in films that she was making, because that's what she was planning. She had a particular favorite book by Kubo Abe, and she really wanted to do that. And it was really funny as she called me and said, had I ever read a book that, the heck was the name of it? The Memory of Eva Riker. And I said, oh my God, that's hysterical, because I read that book like just recently, a couple of months ago. Mm-hmm. And she said, well, they're going to make a movie, a TV show out of it, and a TV movie. And she wanted to know what I thought of it. And I said, I absolutely loved it. I absolutely love the book. And we talked about, you know, what director and just things like that. But it's funny. She was writing across the same books I was writing across.
So she wanted to direct herself, though?
Direct, produce. Yeah.
Right.
She would have been busy in the industry. She had a lot to give. She was like, highly intelligent, very well-versed, very, very smart within the industry. She knew this business a lot better than a lot of people that I know.
Yeah, I guess. Did she ever talk about, the Rebel Without a Cause, you know, the Rebel Without a Cause, Kurt, that James Dean died, obviously, and Sal Mineo was stabbed to death?
No, she had a bust of him that she really adored, that whenever she had to move, the bust would go in the cabinet first. James Dean. She really thought a lot of him. He was a very sweet, rather shy guy. I met him when he would come to the house to pick up Natalie.
Wow. So you it's amazing. You've led such an extraordinary life. I mean, all these people you worked with, and obviously now you're doing everything you can to expose the truth about the death of your sister, Natalie Wood. So I want to give you, we have a couple minutes left there. Is there anything that we have else that you want to touch on that you want to stress in terms of the book and why people should read it?
Oh, no, just please read it if you want to know the truth. That's all. You know, that's just so important so that they know who Natalie really was. And that's what she wanted more than anything. You know, she even said to me one time when we were discussing some guys that she was dating, I would say, well, what about so-and-so? You've been seeing him. She'd, you know, not go with it. I'd say, well, what about so-and-so? What? And she said, you know, they all just adore me because I'm Natalie Wood, the movie star. She said, they don't love me, Natalie. They don't know who I am. And she also had issues about her knowing who she is. So it was not easy, her relationships. But she wanted people to know who she really was. And I'm hoping to do that as well. I'm hoping that they will get that out of the book.
Yeah, a couple more questions in the chat room, then I'll give you the rest of the time to just promote whatever you want to promote, give all the links and everything out. Were she friends with the Kennedys or Marilyn Monroe?
No, she knew Marilyn. They weren't close friends, but she did not know the Kennedys.
So she had no connection there at all? Somebody
no.
said her. Okay. Well, that's great. So, it's wonderful talking to you. I want to tell the people again where they can get the book and anything you have, any upcoming appearances, anything you want to promote.
Any bookstore, you can find it in any bookstore, and it's on Amazon as well. And they do next day deliveries. Oh, and I did an audio book of Little Sister as well.
Okay, so you can see, is that available now?
Yes, it is.
Oh, wonderful. So people can get an audio as well. So, and again, the book is Little Sister, My Investigation into the Mysterious Death of Natalie Wood by her sister, Alana Wood. And just, it sounds like a great read. And it sounds like people responding very well to it. And I really appreciate you coming on and taking the time to be on this show. I'm a great admirer of you. And I said I had a crush on Natalie and you both, probably like millions of other people. And I enjoyed that Playboy you were in. But I used to read Playboy from cover to cover. And so they had a lot of good literature in there. But you were in good company there. It was you have to publish some quality stuff. So again, thanks so much for everything you're doing. And
thank you. I appreciate your having me on the show as well. And have a lovely week.
Thanks, you too. Thanks so much, Lana Wood. And we'll be right back.
Thank you.
Time of fake news, fake politicians, and fake fiat currency, it's getting harder to find the genuine article. That's why when it comes to precious metals, I call the team I can trust. This is David Knight for my friends at Wise Wolf Gold and Silver Exchange. Proudly veteran-owned and operated, Wise Wolf Gold and Silver Exchange is your home for gold and silver coins, bullion, jewelry, and more. Prices and inventory are updated daily, so you get the most competitive possible pricing. And when it's time to sell your gold and silver items, they pay top dollar. Wise Wolf Gold and Silver Exchange also accepts and deals in Bitcoin. Call or text the owner, Tony Arterburn, today at 888-667-1836. That's 888-667-1836. 877-667-1836. Or just go to wisewolf.gold. From bullion to Bitcoin, Wise Wolf Gold and Silver Exchange.
Wise Wolf Gold and Silver Exchange.
Hi there, this is John Barber, and you're listening to the most informed man in America, my friend, fellow author, and raconteur, the great Donald Jeffries Show.
Do you like history, real history, that you were never taught in schools?
Why? The Vietnam War, nuclear bombs, and nation building in Southeast Asia.
By author Mike Swanson, with new documentation never seen before, that'll open your eyes to events that led up to this.
Why? The Vietnam War, nuclear bombs, and nation building in Southeast Asia, 1945 through 1961.
Get your copy today at Amazon.com.
Why? The Vietnam War,
by author Mike Swanson.
WallStreetWindow.com. Gold, silver, the stock market. WallStreetWindow.com.
Perhaps you're invested deeply.
Perhaps you're not in deep enough. Maybe you're thinking about getting started. WallStreetWindow.com. Michael Swanson, the brilliant author of The War State, understood these trends professionally for many years, and now he gives you the benefit of his knowledge. WallStreetWindow.com. Go there now. Go there now. Go there now.
Hi, this is Ron Paul. You're listening to The Donald Jeffries Show.
Chili.com.
Revelation through conversation. You are listening to The Donald Jeffries Show.
Donald Jeffries Show. Hope you guys enjoyed Lana Wood just look at her IMDb credits, and you see she worked with a lot of big names. I mean, being a little kid, picked up on Wayne in one of the great all-time, pretty impressive there. Bond Girl, lots of other stuff, and now she's a crusader for the truth in her sister Natalie Wood's death, really the only one out there who's doing a lot for that. So fantastic. As pleased as I could be and thrilled that the consent to come in. You know, she's got Dr. Oz and people like that, so fantastic she come on my little show. Anyhow, we're going to open up the phone lines. You know, I love getting called, so I hope please feel free to call. The number is 319-527-5016. Again, that's 319-527-5016. So, and talk about anything we want. You know, you can talk about Natalie Wood's death, or we can talk about my showbiz book, Unborrowed Fame, Money, Mysteries, and Corruption in the Entertainment World, which you'll probably start seeing more entertainment-themed shows coming up, as far as, you know, people I can get about, I want to get, you know, something like this. The reason why this was really attractive to me, because it kind of crosses over a bit into my world, because it, you know, an unnatural and serious death of someone. So, you know, I prefer that. And certainly, I don't know, getting people on necessarily discussing about Hollywood, but we may do that. You know, some of these people that are my, friends on social media. Another one I probably would try to get on is Sally Kirkland. I've had Sally Kirkland on before, interviewed her on another show, our friend Bob Wilson's show, about her role in FK. We actually hooked her up with the son of Rose Sheremy, who was the woman who Sally Kirkland portrayed, who was many victims of the Kent JFK body count. And Sally was really thrilled to 80s. The son was very thrilled too. It was the first time they had ever hooked up together. So Sally is very accommodating, and she's another one with a long and illustrious career in Hollywood. So we may make that happen. Let's see. Well, I have to, you know, some of these people, you have to be careful, you know, especially with the pandemic stuff. I mean, virtually all of these celebrities are just as terrified, if not more so, than the general public is about it. So I don't think that we probably couldn't have much of a conversation if I started expressing my skepticism about it. I have to be what did you talk? Chuck said he talked about it last night on his show. Cool. So basically, you know, I talked about this on Rents a little bit the other night, but you know, my own family, people seem to like it. And I don't really care at this point. So I'm kind of fed up with some of the people in my family members who have. Oh, you talked about my book last night. Oh, cool. Thank you, Chuck. Well, please go ahead and listen to that show. By all means. What kind of better topic could you? Oh, you're talking about with me. Oh, God. I'll get it in some way, Chuck. And Lana Wood didn't remember her appearances, and I didn't remember my appearance last night on Ocelli. Of course, I don't know what I was thinking there, but yes, that was fun. Yes, there's so, you know, this family situation. I was I've already been canceled by one niece, as far as she to be on social media a while back. I haven't talked to her probably well over a year, and she was my favorite niece at one time. One of my nephews canceled me a couple of weeks ago when I just kind of said something politically. You know, he's turned into a Karen like virtually everybody has. And obviously, once they knew that I was doubting, you know, this narrative that the greatest psyop of all time in the history of the world, they don't want anything to do with me. And then we'd invited everybody over to our house for Christmas. And they have all they've just turned us down and said, we can't, you know, you're not. Chuck says, good thing most of my family feared me before the pandemic. Yeah, well, you know, I used to think my family, you know, thought pretty highly of me, but I don't know. I think I'd already had some going, because, you know, basically One phenomenon that I've you know experienced from since getting my work published, getting radio shows, just a little bit of notoriety, you know, that I have now, where there are people that know me that I don't know, obviously. But I mean, like today, I wrote an article on Life in America 2.0. And basically, I just wrote it on Substack, and Lou Rockwell picked it up. And I get attention when Lou Rockwell published, but not like this. I mean, man, all day it's just been, you know, email after email coming in and how much they loved it and how much they could relate to it. And I basically told my experiences at the vet's office. You know, we took our golden retriever there last week, and you know, just it's you don't have to wear a mask anywhere else, really, Northern Virginia now. And yet they were requiring one there. I just said, look, I'm not going in. My wife went in. And but, you know, first they made you wait outside with the dog. And I said, this is, you know, is it America 3.0? That's true. Yeah. I'm keeping it simpler, though, for the people. I have said that before. But, you know, so these are the same people that will call the ASCPA on you. You know, these Karens that have existed for a long time, that, you know, they'll look and see if somebody's dog is outside too long in the cold. There are lots and lots of people they'll call, you know, the same kind of people that'll, you know, if they walk by a car that's, you know, the registration's a month late, they'll call cops on you. Those are the people that, you know, that are brought America to this point, that kind of a third personality, unfortunately, character flaw. But, these are the same people that will call, you know, you on your, you know, hey, why is your dog outside? You know, like, it's going to die with a fur coat or something. You're not leaving it out all night. But these are the same people that don't mind. And this is apparently every vet in my area, at least, they don't, they're new. The new normal is the dog doesn't used to come in, and it's like a waiting room in the vet's office. Those of you who have pets know that. So you wouldn't come in. It's sometimes kind of awkward because the animals are, you know, sniffing each other and, you know, maybe sometimes fights, you know, but they don't do that now. You don't have to worry about that. They make you wait outside. So it was very cold again the other day. And I, you know, I was remarking, I said, you know, it's the same people that care so much about the animals. They'll call a owner on it. You know, they think is, you know, using their animal and leaving it outside in the cold to play and run around. But, they're cool leaving it outside in the cold. So, just by the end, then, of course, you know, it took forever. They kept my wife waiting forever. So I strolled over to the post office, which is, and had my experience there. And obviously, the post office is, you know, really, I think even more than DMV, really shows you the extent that America has fallen. But it was just waited forever. And of course, I'm the only one in there with a mask, and it was crowded. But I'm typically the only one in there. And it's, you know, I really get it. You want to get a sense of where you stand in terms of, like, what percentage of the population or whatever buys into this. And just look around and you can pretty much draw a conclusion based on the net. That's the case, at least in my area. Very few of us are wherever I go. I don't care. I mean, nobody ever says anything to me, but it's proudly exposing my nakedness. But it's still, it's kind of sad to see how much we're outnumbered by. Yeah, vets are strange, wait in the parking lot situation now. Yeah, I mean, it's, I don't get it. But, yeah, I don't get anything about this country now. I'm not, pointed out, yeah, I used to say post, yeah, after 2001, I called it 2001 post-COVID. I think I did say that January 6th, it was 3.0. Probably, I guess I should call it 3. But, for most people who haven't read all my writing, it's just easier to say it's America 2.0. But you're right, if you must have read that. I had to come up with a new number for it. And it kind of works like Windows 97, though it is 3.0. And what was the, before Windows 9, what was the original Windows? Was it Windows? Isn't it Windows 3.0 or 3.1 or something? That was the original. You know, the original crappy Windows system. Because I was called a cruel, inhumane human for not getting the shots. Well, you know, it's, yeah, I've been called dangerous. That's for sure. I'm dangerous. But, yeah, that's terrible. And it's just amazing. And again, that's the, that's the other side. You know, that's the side that and that's what I saw. You know, my nephew canceled a couple of weeks ago, and there was an emptiness in his eyes, and there was nothing there. And I realized, you know, just as I, you know, when I would see people I'm not related to, I realized there's nothing I can say. And that's what's the most frustrating, is that there's nothing. When it's reached that point, when you bought into something like this and you're fully vested and you're getting, you know, boosters and you're believing in the variants, there's nothing you can say. And it's very frustrating to try to deal with that. And we have a caller on the line. Caller, you're on the air. Caller, are you there?
Oh, can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Yeah.
How's it going?
How's it going?
Pretty good. Good interview, as always.
Well, thank you. So what's on your mind?
What's on your mind?
I'm hearing a feedback there. I'm hearing myself, actually.
Yeah, I'm having all kinds of technological. I'm having phone problems, so I'm gonna let you go.
Okay. Well, I think you just turn the. Maybe if you just turn it down, it'd be fine.
He's got a player open, I think, Don. That. He probably
it was playing. Place. It was like, you know, when they call in the old radio shows and they say, turn your radio down.
Yeah.
I think it was that. Oh, well, maybe you'll call back. Call back if you get it straightened out. You know, I didn't get to hear what you wanted to say. Chris says, I had an EKG this morning. The technician confirmed what you and I have been saying. The empty hospitals are real, and she advised me not to get the jab or the boosters. She could have been fired for suggesting this. Yeah, that's a profile and courage there. Well, good on her. That's nice to hear, but. Yeah, I wouldn't be too confident about her future employment opportunity. It's just really, it's, you know, with these, when it hits, you know, when you realize, you start thinking, and I'm just thinking of my own family. You know, I have two sisters that are much older than me. I was born very late in life, so all the sisters 19 years old. So, you know. And one of the sisters isn't in great health. So you all, you know, it's just amazing. Life is so short, and you don't, it's just so foolish to, I mean, just the fact that you're stupid enough to buy this absurd narrative. I mean, I'm not going to criticize you for it. And, you know, I don't what people think, if they think we're going to get together for Christmas. And first of all, I used to talk about this stuff all the time before I had any kind of platform to talk about it. But now that I do it all the time, I really, you know, I don't have that much of a desire to talk about it, especially in front of people who I know that's not a receptive audience. So I'm not going to, I talk about this stuff all the time. So I'm perfectly happy to, you know, just whatever. Talk about Christmas and that kind of stuff. And, but, you know, it just seems to me it's very sad that families are, this is happening everywhere. You know, I've already missed one wedding. And obviously, how can I go to too many more? And it's just, you know, it's just, you know, it's really a shame. And but you know, that's the way it is, I guess. Question is, did you see Trevor Noah take heat for asking an honest COVID question? No, I did not. But I know that anybody who's questioning it is to. But look at Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers, man, that. He used to get nothing but good press, but boy, the sports journalistic community, I've seen one attack on him after another. I was shocked by him. I didn't really like Aaron Rodgers. He struck me as very snobbish, and he struck me as like a Karen type. So I was shocked to know that this guy's very, you know, very astute and you know, well read on it and understand it. So, clearly he's not much as. Kyrie Irving in the NBA and stuff. Like, I guess maybe he's never going to play again. I guess I don't know, but it's nice to see. We need more public figures doing that, but we need a lot more. We need some more political. Let's see. He said she's moving to the Ozarks because Providence, right on, changed their laws like California, where stealing from your neighbors isn't being prosecuted. That's so they're not prosecuting. I know they're not prosecuting shoplifting. So they're now. So you can now break in. In someone's home and steal, and they're not prosecuting that. I mean, Jesus is you couldn't write fiction like this. You really, but that's just insanity. Jimmy James says, "Well, I'm sorry you couldn't get your phone fixed out, but please call back if you do. My friend's mom's in the hospital with cancer. It popped off. Up and her son was admitted with COVID, and they are saying they would be in worse shape without the shots." You know, that reminds me, a couple of years ago, one of my sisters got the flu shot. I used to say, I had to get the flu shot. That's the last 5 years or so I worked a regular job because they fired if you didn't get it. And I tried every possible means around it. I tried, you know, becoming a Unitarian. It wouldn't work. Nothing worked. And it's really sickening to see that, you know, people that buy these kinds of things. So my sister that year got the flu shot a couple of years ago, and she got really sick from it. Had a bad reaction, as people do. And I said, "Well, you know, why did you get the flu shot?" And she said, "Well, my doctor said it would have been much worse if I hadn't got it." And that's the kind of mentality you're talking about there. Imagine what would have happened if you didn't get it. You were healthy before. You know, you were healthy before, you were fine. My wife, you know, it's incredible. People getting the boosters and stuff, I don't get it. Is Georgia still getting prosecuted as way too normal? I'm not. 15,000 JFK records done today. I heard about that. I haven't investigated it, but I am surprised. See it happen under Biden, but I know that's not all of the records, but I don't know. We'll have to see how much. First of all, how redacted are they? They probably are very redacted. So, you know, and if it's redacted enough where you can't get names and dates, it's pretty much worthless. But I'm interested to see. But I probably will look over them. I don't have the patience some people do to pour through those things. I mean, it's there's not going to be anything real. They're doing something significant to people like that are, you know, have researched this case for a long time. So, for instance, like a couple of years ago, the only significant document they filed that came out when Trump was president was basically verified what most of us always knew anyhow. And that was that Mayor Earl Cabell of Dallas was a CIA asset, just like his brother, Charles Cabell, who was fired after the Bay of Pigs. But anyway, so that wasn't real surprising. It's to the general public at large, like, who's Earl Cabell? Who's Charles Cabell? They don't know. But it means something to researchers. But the rest of the world now. Oh, new fines for feeding the homeless people. Yeah, and, you know, that started a while back. And I remember writing about that years ago. And I mean, again, you want to get the parallels between, you know, are we in a zoo? I mean, we've all been to the zoos. And, you know, I thought it was ridiculous when they said, you know, one of the joys of being a kid was like, you know, feeding peanuts to the elephants. About, you know, that's exciting, right? Stopped you doing that. No feeding the animals. Well, now it's no feeding the homeless. I mean, what does that say about what they think? Because, you know, the problem is, unlike the zoos, the zookeepers are feeding the animals. Who's feeding the homeless? And so the homeless actually have it worse than the animals in a zoo. Next document dump is slated for December 2022. Yeah, well, this the Dallas mayor with CIA. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's what document showed. Oh, there's a Charles Cabell CIA building. Yeah, it's well, they probably still revere him there, much as, like, you know, Alan Dulles, I'm sure, is still revered within the agency. But I don't hold out a lot of hope to get any kind of significant information. Again, it's like I said many times, do you really think, you know, the people releasing the information would be people coming from the agencies that put it up, at least, and had significant people involved in it, in the conspiracy. But what are the odds? First of all, what are the odds that anything was ever put on paper? I mean, do you think there was blueprints out there that, you know, were passed around in memorandums? Okay, November 22nd, 1963, we use a triangular installation of crossfire, and we're going to kill President John F. Kennedy. This is what we plan to do. The Secret Service will be standing down. We're going to name a patsy, Lee Harvey Oswald. Obviously, there's nothing out there like that. So it's just things that slip through the cracks. And I believe, like Vincent Salandria did, that there are things that purposely are put out there because the people that killed JFK wanted us to know it was a conspiracy from the very beginning, and that's why they made the cover-ups at the Abbey. That's why they planted a pristine bullet that looked like it hadn't hit anything. The magic bullet is. If you're going to plant a bullet, why wouldn't you plant a bullet that looked like it hit something? It took me a long time to realize that. And just incredible stuff. You know, whether the Zapruder film was altered or not, or to whatever degree, the head snap's still in there. So, you know, why would you? I mean, the head snap, he's back to the left and violently backwards, and that's towards the direction the shooter came from. I mean, laws of physics and all that. But there may be something, some little tidbit that comes through that means something, but it doesn't matter because this, I mean, the media, the same media that has ignored this case forever is you've got to look for a smoking gun that is never going to be. Yes, Chris was in Dealey Plaza last night. Very small area. That's what everybody says. And of course, I haven't been there. It's pretty ridiculous, I guess. But that's what everybody says. And it's very small. And the shot was so short. It wasn't easy. I hear all the time. It was an incredibly easy shot. It's just so easy that no genuine experts have ever been able to duplicate it. COVID cases spike even as U.S. hits 200 million vaccine milestone. 200 million vaccines. Folks, we should be protected, right? And how are they spiking? I mean, I'm, to my embarrassment, because, you know, I was a huge sports fan for all my life, you know, from the time playing sports as a youth and coaching my kids. And I'm a real competitive guy. I love sports, but I'll write my most controversial book someday on that. That'll be controversial. But I was one of the early guys playing fantasy football back in 89 with my work mates, and I'm still in that league. And so I have the only interest I have in sports at all now is fantasy football. I watch players. That's all. I don't care about teams. But it's getting harder and harder with this COVID stuff. It's ridiculous because it's, you know, I think the Cleveland Browns have like 18 players in the COVID pro. I mean, this is insane. And of course, keep in mind, none of these people are sick. None of them have any symptoms at all. It's just they're forced to undergo these absurd 90% false positive tests over and over again. It's I've had an incredible season. I went undefeated. I was 14-0. So I have a bye week, but I'm scared like my star players are gonna test positive for COVID right before the big championship game, and you're out of luck. So I have a vested interest, at least in that, in the sports world. But it's I don't know how people can believe this. This kind of nonsense. Yeah, when they're hearing it, it's like they that's not a plague. That's an absurd fake test that has a 90% false positive rate, and it's looking to find positives, and it's just wreaking havoc everywhere, and it's just insane. But it's the old thing, stop the world. I want to get off. I want to get off this train. COVID thing is absurd, and it shows no signs of ending. Chick said, they found out people are still selling the 26 volumes on eBay as digital scan. They want that. You know, I'm going to send it. Oh, cool. That's very nice. Well, yeah, and you can get the testimony is online. What I want to find is a testimony. The House Select Committee took the testimony of a lot of people, and some of it, selective testimony, can be found. A lot of it can't. And it's very frustrating. You know, writing Kid Mystery 3, researching it, and this is one of the people that's helping more than anybody out there. But some of the stuff, you know, it'll say like so-and-so talked to the House Select Committee on Assassinations, and I'll say, oh, what did they say? And I'll, like, so one of the relatives of Dorothy Kilgallen did, for instance, her husband was still alive. And, or not her husband, her father was still alive, actually. And he apparently had some suspicions, and I'm trying to find that testimony. I did. So that's what's really frustrating, is trying to find with these things. But the House Select Committee actually did a worse job than the Warren Commission. I believe that. You know, we criticized the Warren Report, and justly so, because as Harold Weisberg said, you know, the 26 volumes were arranged in with scientific precision. They were arranged, haphazardly, disorganized with scientific precision, I think is how I put it. And I think Sylvia Morris said, it'd be tantamount to looking up an encyclopedia where the contents were alphabetized and, you know, just in no order at all. That made no sense. And that's the way the testimony is in the hearing exhibits, but at least we can now, especially now online, we can access it, find it. But the HSCA, it's a giant mess, what Chuck just said. Because really people have, no one has written a lot about the HSCA, and that's because you can't find a lot of its work. And so I'm trying to do that, but it's not easy. And certainly people like Britson, I see Peter Seacosh, he just came in the chat room, great. He's been helping a lot as well. Any HSCA testimony you guys can find that's not available would be very much appreciated. Peter says to go ice skating outdoors in San Francisco, they're requiring everyone to be double vaxxed. Well, I guess that doesn't surprise me in San Francisco. Jeez, it's probably maybe the Karen capital of the world, I guess. Jimmy, so they have cassette tapes from then, play just fine. Why can't the archives maintain? Yeah, it's there's no excuse for it, but again, I think it's obvious why things are hard to access, because they obviously want the public. They're not anxious to get the information out there. The old sunshine laws. Have you heard anybody talk about sunshine laws anytime recently? It used to be a thing, and especially amongst liberals, genuine liberals. Back when I was a liberal, still I'm a classical liberal, we were all for sunshine. The sunshine is the best disinfectant. The idea was, hey, everything publicly, make it public. My hero, Mark Lane, was ranting and raving about why the Warren Commission testimony wasn't public. Then later during the House Select Committee on Assassinations, they had a very small group of people, including the late, great Jack White, that were televised, I think, on public television, PBS. But all the rest were held in closed sessions. And that's just, that doesn't seem right. I think the public has a right to. Let's see. One time, Bill Bixby is dead after hosting critical testimony in the Marilyn Monroe files. I know Bill Bixby, and I probably should have written. I don't think I included him in an art fair. There were so many people in it, that so many celebrities that I did include. I don't think I had much about Bob Crane in there either. But Bill Bixby, one of my favorites as a kid. Loved my favorite Margin and Courtship of Eddie's Father later. I don't remember. I know he near the end of his life. I remember he was on a show. His album's Alive. I think it was a special on TV. I didn't know he did the Marilyn Monroe thing. Though. Wow. I think he had like three cancer ones. Yeah. Well, he wasn't very old. Healthy. Looked good. But yeah. You wonder. You just what I I'm discovering in what I know about Freddie Prinze from being there that day in Mark Lane's office that. He was obsessed with the JFK, and obviously it's nowhere out there in the public record. And Sal Mineo was stabbed to death, and hired by Orson Welles to pick Orson Welles to star as Sirhan Sirhan in the movie that was never made about the RFK assassination. And John Belushi, I've all but established that he was very interested in the JFK assassination. Our friend Bob Wilson sent me an article from a veteran Dallas reporter that's still alive, and her comment was that every time I interviewed, she was an entertainment reporter, every time I interviewed Belushi, John Belushi, he would rant about Dallas. Your city killed my president. And I talked about the book on the history of Saturday Night Live. His real-life best friend, Dan Aykroyd, co-star on SNL, talked about how he included among his best friends Judge Jim Garrison. You're not going to be friends with Jim Garrison for any other reason than JFK, especially if there's like an Oswald D. Morenschild, age difference. Okay, Chris says, a little more than a year after narrating the Marilyn Monroe files, live 1992 TV special, Bill Bixby collapsed on the set of Blossom and later died in Century City, California, 59 years of age. He was diagnosed with prostate cancer in 91 and was treated, but his cancer reportedly occurred. Yeah, that's very strange. I didn't know that. I have to look into that. Thanks. As always, Chris is on top of things. Oh, Chris said he sent the Dallas Reporter article. Thank you. I should have known. But you and Bob Wilson, Peter, send me the most stuff. But yeah, they can't compete with you. Well, I thank you for doing that, because that did reinforce what I thought. Jimmy James says Bob Dylan made Murder Most Foul. Now he has Me Too women coming left. Really? I didn't know that. Dylan has some Me Too women? I've not heard that. Yes, there it is. Bobby Wygant. That's her name. Thank you. So that's the reporter's name. So, but these are the kind of things I'm working on and for Hidden History 3, and it's up to 300 and some pages. So it's, I just have to tighten it. I want to include more stuff, though. So it may be as big. On Borrowed Fame was my biggest book. It's 488 pages. So Hidden History 3 could rival that, because I haven't even started some of the sections. And Chuck said Elvis was interested in funding an investigation, according to Stephen O'Bany. And that's, you know, that, because, you know, we had Elvis's bodyguard on this show, and Dave Hepler. And I remember asking him about the JFK assassination, and he didn't really say anything about Elvis being interested, which is, so I'll have to ask Steve about that, because, again, that's a, when did Elvis die? Elvis died in 1977. Right. Again, that was the time period where a lot of the same years, Freddie Prinze, and that was, you know, when the House Select Committee on Assassinations was being formed. This is at an all-time high. Dallas, the city that killed my president. Yeah, recoiling at Belushi's work. Yeah, man, that's, and listen, I mean, I have no doubt, just knowing what I know about Belushi, I've read about him, that he's a political animal, and I think he would have been on top of. So, you know, what do we make about some of these other Hollywood deaths? I mean, many of those people that died mysteriously, the Bill Bixies of the world, on Ritter's, even people like that. How many of those people, I mean, who knows, maybe had an overriding interest in the JFK assassination. Maybe were 9/11 truthers, some of the later ones. We don't know. What were they interested in? I think it's interesting to at least consider that, but certainly what are the odds that the only three people I know of, outside of Oliver Stone, that had a real interest in the JFK set, like that, died mysteriously. Yes, Chris says, yeah, John Lennon was into it as well, even funded Mabrosell's work. Has that been established that he actually funded it? I know that certainly May was one of the first ones. Oh, talking about his death. And so that's who somebody, boy, Mabrosell, man, she was around today, boy. We'd have a lot of fun with her. Have I ever written about Scientology? No, I have. No, not really. I have not. I have kind of mixed feelings about that, because Scientology, certainly anything that the media has, certainly South Park made a lot of fun of it. But I remember back in the day when I was subscribing to the Spotlight, which became the American Free Press. They had a lot of sympathetic features about scientific Scientology, because Scientology was really engaged in a lot of wars with the IRS back then, and of course Spotlight was too. But then later, somehow, some people came in and they ended up like trying to take over the Spotlight. And I don't think it was because of Scientology. I think they were associated with it, but so they kind of heard on that. But we do know Scientology certainly has the proper surgery and that kind of medication. I don't know if that extends into medical industrial complex as a whole. And I don't know as far as what Scientology officially, I wonder what their stance is on the pandemic, but I would have to think they're skeptical, because they are skeptical in general, I think. Pharma. So yeah, you hear some bad things about it, but I think that they're, you know, they're intriguing at least. I certainly would, you know, wouldn't mind talking to a representative about that. Mark Ruffalo and Mark Cuban were 9/11 truthers. Yeah, absolutely. I have heard that. And Mark Cuban backed off. He was, I think, going to finance Loose Change by Dylan Avery. I'm trying to get Dylan Avery back on the show, because he was on iProtest a while back. I'm friends with his mom. So he hasn't answered me lately. So because he has a new movie out now, I'd like to get him on to talk about that. The lady who played the wife on The King and Queen's quite different on that time. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. You hear awful things about it. So, you know, certainly I have, I don't know. I'm not on the inside. So, Remini. Yeah, Remini, yeah. Dylan, now, you know, Dylan's, he's got some kind of new film out. And so hopefully he'll, but I remember when he was on the other show, he wasn't real talkative. You kind of, you know, you get the guests that you can't stop them from talking, and that's probably more common. And you get other guests that are, you have to keep kind of pushing and prodding to get something out of them. So, but he has a new film, I think, about, and so hopefully we can try to get him on there. I'm trying to get provocative guests all the time for you, but otherwise, oh, Steve, Steve, there's Steve Cameron. Speaking of strange Hollywood deaths, in my book, The Deputy Interviews, I touched on how actor Sal Mineo was killed shortly. Yes, after announcing he's producing a film about the conspiracy to kill Arthur. Yes, that was the Orson Welles project. He's also very vocal about the JFK assassination being a conspiracy. Yeah, I think he said the Warren Report was bullshit on Johnny Carson. I think it was on Johnny Carson. It was on some television. Absolutely, Steve. Good to see you here. Dylan was a Columbine truther way before 9/11 truther. Was he really? Chris says. Here's Jimmy James. Bob Dylan accused of decades-old sexual abuse of drugging a 12-year-old girl in New York. Really? God, is it? Can I not have any heroes? You know, Dylan was quite the ladies' man, supposedly. Are any of these people? You just are any of them clean? Danny could at least you hear some of them that didn't like mess with kids, but they gosh, that seems to be something that pops up, and there's a reason why I concentrate on the child sex scandals and everything. You can do this at Pizzagate, whatever you want to call it, because it's a real thing. And because the average person, and how many people do you know that have been, you know, that have had an accusation like that against them? But if you're in the public eye, and of course I realize that's something they could, you know, use to try to bring somebody down, but it just happens too much. And I think it's part of that entertainment world, I think it's, and the political world, again, the crossover. So many you know, similarities between the showbiz and politics. Show business for and it really is. And he says, thanks, great interview. I know he wanted me to ask that question. Great interview, Alana Wood, shocking about Kirk Douglas. Yeah, I thought she had said something, and luckily that's Chris, I think, left the link in the chat room about her naming him. And in her book. So, and you know, Kirk Douglas was also at the 70s. All this is in Bard fame. There was a starlet who literally disappeared, Jean Spangler. Now, she was an aspiring starlet. She hadn't been in much. And she vanished without a trace. And the authorities said that she had an association. I think she'd worked with Kirk. That the authorities were looking for Kirk. And he was questioned. Now, you know, what that means, I don't know. But, you know, he was there and he had the accusation against him that Lana Wood is saying. Who knows? He lived to be 104 or whatever, so. Good they die young and all that. I think Tom Petty was a good man, Jimmy James says. Absolutely. You know, Tom Petty and I, you know, I write about his death and on Bard fame. I'm not sure what to make of it. He seemed to have an awful lot of physical conditions. And of course, you know, again, the problem with the rock world especially is these guys do so many drugs that it can, you know, usually they can attribute almost anything. Well, they wanted to knock people off. They can do it. They can use that as a smoke train. Well, sometimes, obviously, it could just be drugs. But I love Tom Petty. I was crushed when he died. He was part of the soundtrack of my youth. My wife turned him on to him when I was young, and Tom Petty, I really loved his music because he clearly had the same big influence as I did, which was Bob Dylan and Roger McGuinn of the Birds, and so our singing voices sounded very similar. Mine not quite as good as his. You know, I was writing songs back then and trying to half-ass play the guitar, and you know, I had an okay voice, but most of the time, it kind of went into a Tom Petty. And I didn't know Tom Petty. I heard of him then when I first started writing. But he, you know, when somebody like that, I remember when John Candy died, kind of up the way, because that was part of, you know, my youth, you know, TV. And someone like that dies, and that you really admire Tom Petty so much. I listen to his music more than ever now, and it's very shocking. And so you wonder, behind the scenes, what was Tom Petty? I've tried to find out whether John Candy was in JFK. So you think, he's had some kind of an interest, right? But I have not been able to establish that. I'm friends with his widow on Facebook, but she's never responded to me when I've asked her questions. But she's there, and his daughter, Jennifer Candy, used to go back and forth with me on Twitter. And I think I asked her, but I think she said she didn't. Chris said, Dave McGowan said he'd get sick every time he found out a favorite arts entertainer had a pedo pastor. Yeah, I mean, it does. It's hard to, Woody Allen. I'm a huge Woody Allen. And I love his movies, but it's hard to watch them now. Especially, he has that line in Annie Hall, I think, where they're talking about, they say something about politicians. A politician, they're, those people are, those people slightly above pedophiles or child molesters, I think it was. So, to know, is he saying this and he was one himself? Because he wrote his own screenplays. So it's hard to, it's hard to have your, what does he say, never meet your heroes. In this case, never meet the allegations of your heroes. May Purcell, her works featured in the publication The Realist. Oh, that was secretly funny. Well, John Lennon was friends with Paul Krasner, who also wrote for The Realist, and I communicated with Paul Krasner years ago, and he verified to me, Lennon was very interested in the JFK assassination. I figured he had to be, because I know McCartney was. He was friends with Lennon, and that's what he told me. Absolutely. I remember this, Chris. December 16, 1970, May's daughter, Bonnie Purcell, was killed in an automobile accident, which May believed was a warning to her. Other more egregious threats were launched towards her when she exposed linked elements of the U.S. military and a cult. Yeah, and she wasn't the someone else who lost a daughter was Shirley Martin, who I still think Shirley Martin is the most underrated JFK researcher, most unacknowledged. In the early days, if you look back, she was just a housewife who did a lot of the original research that the other critics picked on and used in their books. Sometimes they credited her, sometimes they didn't. And for whatever reason, she stopped, and her daughter also, who worked with her, was killed in a car accident, and that's when she seemed to have stopped. I don't know that she necessarily thought that it was, but again, it's one of those indications, and she should have written a book. She should get more credit from our dysfunctional research community, but they never credit her. But that's typical of them. They don't credit people who they should, and overrate other people. But Julie says, I knew adults that got World Watchers when I was a kid, ended up getting me in touch with Solandria later on. Solandria is, he just died like last year, 90 some years. I tried to get a hold of him. I just admired him so much. He's another guy that never wrote a book. Boy, he was one of my favorite critics. He had it right. John Lennon said, I think we're being run by maniacs for maniac lens. Yeah, it's hard to argue with that. And Lemmings weren't pedos, at least my biggest heroes were. I haven't heard, I hadn't heard anything about, you haven't heard anything about that with the Beatles, I don't think, as far as I know. I don't know what happened to Shirley True Don. Yeah, I mean, she's, I try to credit her wherever I can, at least, and she's, her along with, and the other one who's, who is very unacknowledged as the first so-called conspiracy theorist was Marguerite Oswald. The more I read about that, I mean, she was the one that was turning these people on, to Leeds, and she's the one that hired Mark Lane to represent her son's interests before the Warren Commission. So she, and most people think she was a spook, and I don't think that at all. So I'm trying to, in History 3, I'll try to restore her reputation at a raw deal. And for good reason, because she was the loudest voice that was speaking for her. Have you called Jose Perdomo yet? Hell, he scares me. Like Bob Wilson wanted me to call, one of the Cuban exiles. What's the guy's name that Oswald got in a fight with, a stage fight? I can't believe it. Blanking I don't really want to go there with those people. I mean, what are you going to get out of them? You know, they're not going to. That's right. Carl's Bring Gary. That's it. Thank you. Okay. I have to get the number again and we'll have you call. Make them an offer they can't refuse. Now, I have this voice that I used to make little tapes. When I was, I used to put these little on and stuff when I was 12. I got my little cassette recorder when I was like 12. And I kept them somewhere. They're around here somewhere. But I mean, my voice hasn't changed appreciably since I was 12. Really, it's very recognizable. So it never really changed. It never got that deep pitch. You know? So my voice doesn't intimidate anybody, unfortunately. I mean, most of the time when I go, you know, ma'am, you know, or they think your parents at home, that kind of thing. So you need an intimidating voice. So Chuck has that. So, you know, maybe I'll have you be the heavy to make those calls. Chris says, remember when I found Seymour Hersh? Absolutely. At Seymour Hersh, I got on the phone. He answered the phone, and he didn't talk too much, but he did, you know, at least he answered, and he spoke for a little bit and said, basically, my book's coming out, and I'll have the quote in Hidden History 3, but it was something like, I better not say anything, or something like that. Cryptic. Hersh would certainly... I have ambivalent feelings toward. I said, you sound younger than me. Yeah, I mean, I get that all the time. It's like I really, maybe not real recently, but I did until pretty recently. People would, well, of course, you know, we still have a landline, but hardly anybody calls it. So it would only really apply to landlines when you know is your parents at home. I used to get that stuff, and I still get ma'am. All the time. I don't even correct them anymore. I just go and play along or whatever. But it is what it is. But, we all can't have that deep, Jeff Rentz type. He's got a radio voice, you know, the kind of deep, it almost sounds trained. And I would like to have that, but I don't. Absolutely. Hersh needs to spill the beans about the Iraqi boys being raped in front of their mothers. But, you know, Hersh also wrote The Dark Side of Camelot, where he, you know, and Jim DiGenio is one thing I agree on with him, where I think he was very unfair to the Kennedys and buys in a lot of the missing. I imagine Hersh probably doesn't care who killed JFK either, because he probably, you know, again, thinks he deserved it, like all the Kennedy haters. But on the other hand, he's certainly... just talking about the Iraqi boys being raped in front of their mothers alone, and that's something that, again, that's a if, like, for instance, if really if Hunter Biden really is raping a 10-year-old Chinese girl, remember, you heard Hillary Clinton was torturing a kid, we heard that on Anthony Weiner's laptop or whatever. If you get these kinds of things, something like that, or something where there is a tape of our boys, support the troops, screwing little boys in front of their screaming mothers, which is what Seymour Hersh claims. That's that's beyond a smoking gun. That's a nuclear explosion. And that's the kind of thing that they can't. And even if they didn't have a hit team killing people, they would almost have to kill for that, because you have to stop. Because that brings everything down, because there's no way that the average person sees that. You can't make it support them. Chuck says, I sound like a hard rock DJ accidentally walked into the talk studio. Yeah, exactly. Peter Dale Scott said, I sound like a guy they cut out of The Godfather, according to a friend of mine. Yeah, you do. You could have made that cut. Sure. You got that street smart guy. And Jimmy James, because AOC burns her maid with cigarettes. All right. What's your source for that? I mean, that's an interesting interesting allegation. But anyway, AOC, you know, we've talked about that. I'm still trying to I would still love to talk to her brother, who was the one that first said that she was hired to, you know, basically hired for the role. But I imagine it'd be very difficult. And I think Chris found some contact information for him. I don't think we got a phone number or email. Jimmy Jason, Reddit and Sputnik. promise you Amy Klobuchar does, Jimmy. Amy Klobuchar. Mrs. Excitement, isn't she? Boy, that's one I remember when they started trying to promote her amongst those candidates, and I thought, wow, really? I mean, they're all bad, but geez, this she is just. I mean, she made Bob Dole seem a lot. It's like, by the way, I Bob Dole recently passed away, but I had an anonymous source who fed me some great information. I'm going to use in Hidden History 3. Worked on Capitol Hill for 25 years, and she did not have. You'll have to read it. She had some very explosive things to say about Bob Dole. Basically, said he was one mean SOB. So he was not quite the angelic figure the press tried to cover up when he died. They're so desperate. They did the same thing with McKiniac. You know, they think, oh, these are good. And present him in a picture, but his career says otherwise. Hillary and Podesta torturing kids on the dark. Yeah, I mean, on the dark web. Again, that's what I'm saying. And I think there is an element of that. I think there's we talk about them being compromised and blackmailed. I think I can believe that some of these things are filmed, recorded to hold over people's heads. And there may be a ritualistic aspect to it. Maybe they get off on watching it. You know, I mean, there's a reason snuff films are, apparently the. I mean, I can't think of anything. I think on the scale of degradation, that's pretty much absolute bottom. Snuff films. I mean, you're getting entertained by somebody actually dying, and there are people that get off on that. And but the fact that that stuff is it's like Norm Macdonald. And thank you, Chris, for one of the many things outside of research. You turned me on to the work of Norm Macdonald. I pretty much normed out now. I watched just about every clip I could find on YouTube, and very, very funny guy. Just a unique guy, and I'm sorry that I didn't realize that. He was. I was prejudiced against everybody on Saturday Night. Yeah, he did do a great Bob Dole. He was a much better Bob Dole than Bob Dole was. Son of Sam cult film, some of the murders, the process tricks. Yeah, I mean, it's, you look at Bohemian Grove. I don't think it's at all been established that that was a mock child. I think it's very cool that, that was real. And those ceremonies, would they go to all that trouble? I don't know. And we know how they feel. So I think that there's, again, that's a very, very dark area of the rabbit hole. Rex is going to talk about the smiley face killers next on that. Norm was great as Rod Serling and Burt Reynolds. Yeah, certainly looked. But yeah, Norm, and yeah, it's but, Norm Macdonald, no, can anybody do comedy? No, I don't think anybody can do comedy. They've basically made it so you can't say anything. What, isn't it? Yes, Bob Dole was used by Big Pharma to sell Viagra. Yes, around the time the ban was lifted. Yep, absolutely. This thing is just an awful guy. That's really, I think of Republicans, I think of Bob Dole and Mitt. There's the music starting up. And yeah, thanks so much for listening to the Donald Jeffries Show. We'll see you in the same bat time, same bat channel next week. Thanks for listening.